Treaty Now. I think you'll remember that song. The singer, the voice of Yothu Yindi, former Australian of the Year, Mr. M. Yunupingu. He'll be honoured at a state memorial service in remote northeast Arnhem Land today. He died earlier this month, the age of 56. Kidney disease. It was back in 1988. As part of the bicentennial celebrations, Prime Minister Bob Hawke promised that a treaty would be concluded between white and Indigenous Australia and the federal government by 1990. We know what happened next, or didn't. Yothu Yindi went on to release that song Treaty in 1991. And here we are in 2013. Still no treaty. Joining you now to talk over this idea of a treaty between the Australian peoples is Chris Graham. He's former founding editor of both the National Indigenous Times and Tracker magazine. He's a Walkley award-winning journalist, he is. Now a freelance writer based in Sydney. Spends a lot of the year on the road, reporting from regional and remote Aboriginal communities. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
A treaty. It sounds a big concept. We're not there yet.
No, in fact, I think we're a long, long, long way from there, unfortunately. It is a big concept in many respects, and ironically, it's also not that big a concept at all. A treaty really is just an agreement between two or more parties. It's the T word's got a bit of a political connotation to it, whereas the word agreement doesn't.
It could be anything we wanted it to be, could it?
Absolutely. Not? It could be, and that's what's perplexing about Australia's response to treaty. We seem to fear it, or there seems to be a deep political fear of the notion of a treaty, but all it is an agreement, and if one or more of the parties don't agree, well, there is no agreement. So you've risked nothing discussing it.
It was so much the talk in 1988.
It was.
And it's still front of mind for Indigenous Australia?
Oh, very much so. Look, this would be very uncontroversial to say that it is the number one issue politically for the vast majority of Aboriginal Australians.
Explain that. Why is that?
Well, because it's never been signed. Australia is the only developed nation on earth that doesn't have a treaty with its First Peoples. Canada, US and New Zealand, of course, do. But Australia not only doesn't have a treaty, but it's not even having a conversation about a treaty. The conversation we look like having in the coming months and years is about constitutional recognition, which is really about as far from a treaty as you could possibly get.
Why is that? Because that would strike me as touching on similar territory of recognition.
Well, that all depends on your perspective, because what you're essentially asking Aboriginal people to do is accept their part in the Australian Constitution, while at the same time they want to retain their own sovereign rights. So how can they be part of an Australian Constitution while retaining their own sovereign rights? And of course, legally they can, but ideologically that's a nonsense.
It's a chicken and an egg.
Well, it is. They seem to be polar opposites, although I should say in defence of the people who promote constitutional reform, they do see this, I think, predominantly as a step towards treaty. But I think they see that from a non-Aboriginal perspective. Aboriginal people that I speak to overwhelmingly don't see it as a step towards treaty at all. They see it as a betrayal of hundreds of years of resistance.
As a step towards treaty. Now, you mentioned other developed countries who've concluded this kind of a document, this kind of an understanding with their First Peoples. How has that happened? Can you give us some examples in, say, the Canadian or the American experience of how that came to be and what those treaties entail and include?
Well, they came about after, as everyone would know, years and years, decades of conflict. New Zealand is obviously the closest to home, and it's also regarded as probably the strongest treaty of nations colonised by the British. The Treaty of Waitangi was signed, I think, in, don't hold me to this, it was 1876 or thereabouts. I actually have Māori heritage, so I should know, but it's regarded as one of the most iconic treaties in the world. That's not to suggest that it hasn't been breached many, many times, and it has. But in New Zealand, for example, there's not just a Treaty of Waitangi. That's the overarching one that everyone knows about. But today there are many, many treaties, regional treaties, between First Nations people and corporations, government, all sorts of different styles of treaties, which have all formed the basis of all sorts of agreements about all sorts of things. Contrary to the Australian view about treaties that or rights-based arguments that you're not going to feed children with human rights, treaties in New Zealand have formed the basis of educational and employment outcomes for Māori. So they actually achieve the precise opposite of the belief in Australia.
Sunday Extra, and our guest is Chris Graham, journalist, and we're talking the idea of a treaty between the peoples of this country, white and black. Chris, what's the obstacle? I mean, in the examples you give there, we have some foundation treaties that are sort of looking at resolving conflict, that it's something which takes place at the end of that fighting and draws a line under it. Is the first part in this country to acknowledge the conflict and the fighting?
I think that's an important first step. And most Australians, I think, concede nowadays that there has been a long history, firstly of fighting and now of enmity. But the Aboriginal people I speak to consistently say that the hostilities have never ended, that we don't necessarily go out and massacre First Nations people like we used to. We don't perhaps put poison in the water holes like we used to, but the dispossession of First Nations people off their lands and the refusal of governments to invest in their communities like they do in non-Aboriginal communities endures today. So from the Aboriginal perspective, there is very much a call for an end to the hostilities. That's obviously a view that wouldn't be shared by a majority of non-Aboriginal Australians who think that. Certainly, at least since the 1967 referendum, we've worked relatively cooperatively with Aboriginal people. But that view is not shared by Aboriginal people.
Well, and this flies in. I mean, the John Howard view on the treaty idea that a nation does not make a treaty with itself.
That's exactly right. In fact, in 1988, Howard, as opposition leader, quite famously described the notion of a treaty with First Peoples as repugnant, that it flew in the face of the notion of One Australia. But that hasn't been the experience in New Zealand, it hasn't been the experience in Canada, and it hasn't been the experience in the US. In fact, quite the contrary. What it has led to is broader national health and wealth, because the less you are spending on improving the terrible life statistics of First Peoples, the more you have to go around the rest of the nation.
And you speak there of enmity between Aboriginal and white Australia. What's the depth of that feeling?
Look, from many, many, many Aboriginal people, it's very, very, very deep. Aboriginal people will talk about sovereignty, that it's never been ceded. They talk about treaty and they talk about land rights. All issues that really have no mainstream acceptance in non-Aboriginal Australia, and that is an enduring source of frustration for Aboriginal people in Australia. Not just frustration, it's an enduring source of a deep sense of loss and an enormous sense of anger that Australians don't even want to discuss these basic issues. And the irony is, as a nation, we've signed treaties that with the United Nations that suggest these are the sorts of things we should do.
We happily breach them all the time.
We do. And look, Kevin Rudd, shortly after coming to power, endorsed the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which explicitly affords First Peoples the right to a treaty. Now, the UN Declaration, because it's a declaration, is not legally binding, but it's certainly a statement of our aspirations. But really, they're only our stated aspirations to the international community. They're a long, long way removed from our domestic practice.
Thanks for your time this morning.
It's a pleasure as always, sir.
Chris Graham is founding editor of both the National Indigenous Times and Tracker magazine, now a freelance writer.